Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
Have you ever heard of Orange Theory?
I have.
I just went to my first Orange Theory class.
How was it?
I didn't die.
That's good.
My goal was either I'm going to kill it or it's going to kill me. And I think I killed it. So granted, the class, I was the second youngest of the class. So I think the odds were pretty stacked in my favor. But it was not as bad as I thought it would be. It was kind of fun. The treadmill part, you're kind of like adjusting because they want you in a certain heart rate zone. And so you're like adjusting like the incline and the speed. So kind of like a DJ. I'm like, this is super cool. And then they throw the weights. They don't throw weights at you, but they like put you on the weights. And I'm like, this isn't fun anymore. But I'm in desperate need of a shower. So I'm glad we're recording from a distance. Because it is not pleasant over on this side of the computer.
Well, for those who don't know, what is Orange Theory?
Oh, okay. Orange Theory is a workout class. I have a friend who did a very intense duration of classes last year. And for that, she got a free pass. And guess who is the owner of that free pass? Yay. This girl right here. So she's like, you get to work out with me. So it is a class and they have circuits. And so you can do like treadmill stuff, or you can do rowing stuff, or you can do weight stuff, depending on the teacher, depending on the setup. A lot of fun, a lot of work. It is a high intensity interval training class. It is not for the weak. I am weak. It is wild. I am recovering now with my tea and I'm going to shower after this, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun and it was a good way to get my mind off some things as of late. But yeah, very encouraging community, which is cool. I kind of initially thought it was a little cult-ish, and not to say it isn't, but it was a fun cult.
You can understand why.
Exactly. I can see the
A cult.
I can see the potential. Joining. Yeah, exactly. Maybe. Well, it is expensive. So I do have this pass for the month of January. So maybe I'll join them for the month of January and then try not to get peer pressured in February. And then let everybody down and feel so guilty about it. It'll be great. It'll be fine. It's fine.
It is quite expensive, though.
It is very expensive.
Yeah.
Oof. But yeah, I don't know. It is fun, but it's fun to get out there and move. It makes your endorphins flow and your brain cells happy, even for a little bit. And you need all the little happy brain cells you can get right now. So, yeah.
Indeed.
I do recommend that. Even go for a walk.
Get some happy brain cells, will you? In a healthy way.
You need all the happy, yes. If you can't just make serotonin, you can buy it too. But I got it with a free pass.
So. Well, on that note, hello.
Ahoy.
And welcome to the Under the Waves podcast, a show about all things shipwrecks on the Great Lakes. My name is Andrew. I shall be thine captain for today's entertainment.
And I'm Michelle. I almost forgot that was my intro. Welcome aboard this week's episode. First one we're recording in 2026. I know it's not our first episode of 2026, but we took a little break. It was a nice break. It was a deserved break. It felt really quick.
Time flies when you get old.
Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like bananas.
All right. Imagine the day. It's October 2nd, 1901. The SS M.M. Drake, along with her consort, the 27-year-old three-masted schooner barge, the Michigan, is 2 days into their trip across Lake Superior. Both vessels are heavily loaded with iron ore from Superior, Wisconsin, and headed downbound. These two ships encounter a storm the first day into their trip with bone-chilling rain and 55-mile-an-hour winds, which is 88.5 kilometers per hour. The Drake, working overtime to get both herself and the schooner she was pulling through the stormy waters, begins to encounter trouble. Things were not looking good for the Michigan. The seams of Michigan's planking, which had been steadily letting in water, were beginning to leak at a rate that was quickly overwhelming the pumps. It was starting to become quite clear that the Michigan would more than likely sink before the next day dawned, and probably without warning. Captain John MacArthur Jr. on board the Michigan orders a thick towing hawser or tow rope to be pulled in, bringing the two ships closer together. The closer distance allowed for the two crews to be able to communicate better by shouting through a megaphone above the tempest. Due to the weather and prevailing winds, there was no way for the crew on the Michigan to safely lower their yawl into the turbulent waters. It was decided that in the pitch black, an attempt would instead be made to just transfer the crew from one ship to another. Quite simple, quite easy, you would think, but remember, it's a storm. This maneuver was quite the challenge, but not one that was unfamiliar to the Drake. She had successfully performed this kind of rescue before with another ship that was in trouble previously. This time around, the Michigan is drawn up to the Drake so that her bow is up against the Drake's stern quarter on the leeward side, which is downwind, or the side that's protected from the wind. Now, as both hulls scrape up against each other in the waves, the crew from the Michigan leaps over to the Drake every time the waves bring the two decks close enough to level with one another. Finally, the last few make it to safety when suddenly a gust of wind and a large wave causes the Michigan to shift into a sea trough. This shifts the vessel just enough that now her jib boom that juts forward from her forepeak, or the most forward triangular compartment at the bow, tears into and across the length of the Drake. The Drake's aft cabin fractures, and her tall smokestack is lopped off and shoved overboard. But let's leave her there for a second and get into the history of the Drake, along with a few other ships that she encountered throughout her lifetime. The SS M.M. Drake was a 201-foot-long, or 61.3-meter, wooden steam barge built at the Union Dry Dock Company in Buffalo, New York, in 1882. She was named after the then superintendent of her building company, Marcus Motier Drake. Along with being 201 feet long, the Drake had a beam of 34.4 feet, or 10.5 meters, and a depth of 14.5 feet, or 4.4 meters. Her gross register tonnage was 915 tons, and her net being 762 tons. We know she was a steamer, but our researcher was sadly unable to find a record of what kind of steam engine she possessed. A little digging did uncover that the Drake was more than likely some kind of compound steam engine, where the steam was expanded twice for greater efficiency than engines prior, which were popular on the Great Lakes from 1869 until the introduction of the triple expansion steam engines in 1887.
Just barely missed them. 5 years.
Very sad.
5 years. She could have been a triple expansion steam engine.
Could have been. The Drake, officially number 91485, started her career in September of 1882. She was owned by John Green of Buffalo, New York, which conveniently was also where her port of registry was. The Drake was built to be a steam barge who towed consorts. And a quick reminder, consorts are generally fully loaded schooners or steamer barges that are towed by a larger steamer, often in a line of several of them. Mariner and historian Mark Thompson once wrote that the unpowered barges, the consorts, were, quote, uninspected vessels, and, quote, not regulated by the marine safety laws. He reported that between the years of 1870 and 1940, this practice of towing unregulated consorts resulted in many of the most serious groundings when said ships eventually broke or were cut loose during storms. For the Drake, she and her consorts were mainly loaded up with coal and iron ore to be taken around the Great Lakes. Her first job was to tow the barge F.W. Gifford. The following year, in 1883, the Drake was chartered. Chartered, right? Not charted.
She was chartered. She took up charting. Oh. Yeah, wow. That's a silly mistake.
Silly goose.
The following year, look into that.
The following year, in 1883, the Drake was chartered from Lake Erie to Duluth, Minnesota, and back for coal, as well as from Marquette, Michigan, and back to Lake Erie for iron ore. But she had her first accident when she became stranded on a reef sometime in 1882. Her next incident was in September of 1883, when she ran aground at the Fox Islands. Things seemed to be smooth sailing or steaming for the Drake for the next several years, as not much was mentioned of her work or dry dock life. In 1885, she was readmeasured? What's readmeasured?
Read on. You might find out. I may not know how to spell chartered, but I do know how to look up readmeasured.
In 1885, she was readmeasured and had some upper decks installed back at the shipyard she was built at, the Union Dry Dock Company. And no, we did not read that incorrectly, believe it or not. Admeasured is a thing. To admeasure means pretty much to measure something, but in a more formal or exact way. That's weird. It's not commonly used in today's language, obviously, but it is still a term applied in shipping, marine architecture, and a few other fields. The more you know.
He's supposed to do a little rainbow, like, the more you know.
Perfect. Do, that's well do, done. Do, do. So she was measured. And when she was like precisely, which I don't know, when I measure, I try to be kind of precise. So I don't understand why it needs to be add measured, but
it was more precise.
Yeah, better than subtract measured, I guess.
But yep. Yep.
In 1888, the Drake ran ashore near Sheboygan, Michigan, and then in 1889, she struck a bar and sank, oops, at the dock in Duluth, Minnesota, only to be brought back up again, patched up, and put back into service, right as rain, good as new.
I think it's a sandbar. It's not like a building bar. I don't think she like ran into a building and sank. I think it's like she hit a sandbar. In case anyone was confused.
I was not, but...
Well, there was a boat that we covered that she did hit a building and sank. I can't think of the boat right now.
You hit a building from a lake.
Well, like a dock, like, you know, a dockside building. There are buildings next to water.
Usually, yeah. Yep. Yep. Usually there's like a dock.
A dock in the way.
In the way.
Doesn't stop some boats. You'd be surprised.
So a ship walks into a bar.
The second one ducks. We're so funny. Oh my gosh. We're going to get so...
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results. Expert support. Lose more weight. Make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.
How many listeners this year?
Also in 1889. Not sure if it was before or after she sank or hit a bar or walked into a bar or ducked. The Drake was bought by James Corrigan of Wickliffe, Ohio, who became her third and final owner. Sometime between being owned by John Green and James Corrigan, the Drake was owned by the Candler Brothers out of Detroit, Michigan.
You said that real weird.
Well, it says Candler Bros, but I figured I'd switch it to Brothers. And then I was just like, well, I'll just saunter through Detroit, I guess.
Detroit, Michigan.
Anyway, due to the times, it was probably the Candler Brothers, but Bros. Okay. Due to the times, it was probably the Candler Brothers, but Bros sounds cooler. Thank you.
It was in the newspaper as Candler Bros. Bros. Dot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't go around and just say, hey, what's up, bros?
Probably not, but it sounded cool.
My brother. Like, that's probably what it was.
Probably.
Right before being bought by the Candler Brothers, the Drake was grounded on the White Shoal in the Straits of Mackinac and was abandoned. Well, all right, well, thanks for tuning in. According to various newspaper clippings that were later gathered in 1901, the insurance companies who had insured the Drake accepted the ship as a total loss. After this, the ship was removed from the shoal and taken to Bay City, where she was repaired and then sold to the Candler Brothers. We thought this was a fun little tidbit of information. As much as the Drake had mishaps during her working life, she also got to be the hero to other ships who had their own bad days.
You didn't think it was fun? I thought it was fun.
I thought it was a hoot and a holler, personally.
Hoot and a half, at least.
How come bad days is italicized?
Then why did you emphasize it?
Your own bad days.
Well, you kind of did. You're just picking certain words to saunter on, which you're going all willy-nilly on it, but that's fine.
I'm a couple weeks out of practice. On August 25th, 1883, the Drake was towing her consort, the 292-ton schooner named Dot. Good name. Before being converted into a consort, Dot was built in 1865 in St. Catharines, Ontario, as a Canadian wooden bark called the Mary Merritt. In 1881, the Merritt ran ashore, incurring quite a bit of damage. From the document, it sounded like it was only about 6 miles east of Grand Marais, Michigan. Wherever she was eventually recovered, rebuilt, and then reclaimed by Americans, becoming a U.S. vessel after some, quote, considerable legal trouble, end quote.
We're like vultures. Oh, this one's ours!
This is when she was converted into a schooner barge and renamed Dot. Fast forward to 1883, the Drake was pulling the Dot downbound across Lake Superior, and the two of them got caught up in a sort of gale. When the ships were several miles off of Grand Marais, Michigan, weird if this was only a few miles away from the site of her previous accident, the Dot began leaking heavily. Captain W. Jones on board the Dot hailed the Drake, who came alongside the sinking consort and offloaded the crew. The Dot was left to founder in deep water, where she eventually sank. At the time, the Dot was owned by Captain A. C. Smith from Detroit. She was loaded up with iron ore. The Dot was not seen again until the Great Lakes Shipwreck Historical Society announced their discovery of her remains in over 350 feet, or 106.7 meters, of water on October 25th, 2021. And we should have warned you all sooner, but consider this your heads up. There aren't a lot of photos of the ships in life or in sinking. We have scrounged up as much as we could, and if you happen to have more, or see more, or find more, feel free to send them on over to our email, underthewavespodcast@gmail.com. And if you also see our poor researcher who went out looking, feel free to send them back this way as well. I think they're still wondering about scrounging in the
We gave them a life jacket, but yeah. just kind of shoo them this way.
Shoo.
Set treats out.
Yeah.
Shoe fly, just get out of here. I don't know. I'm also out of practice.
No, it's
pretty just leave me alone.
On July 13, 1889, the Drake picked up 3 passengers and, along with the 15-man crew, from a 223.4-foot-long, 68.1-meter, 35-foot-wide, 10.7-meter, and 18-foot-deep, 5.5-meter wooden steam barge called the Smithmore. The Moore originally launched in 1880.
The S'more. Were you going to say S'more?
I was going to say the Smith, and then I said the
I think Moore. I know why it sucked. It got soggy. Laugh, please. Laugh. Don't leave me here.
The Moore, originally launched in 1880, had been sideswiped by another ship named the James Pickens in heavy fog. Once the passengers were safe, the Drake towed the Moore for 6 hours toward safety. Unfortunately, the Moore reached the end and sank only 300 feet, or 91.4 meters, away from a sandbar at the mouth of the harbor in Munising, Michigan. Today, according to NPS.gov, the Smith Moore is, quote, the most dramatic and well-known wreck in the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore Preserve, end quote. She sits in about 95 feet of water, which is 29 meters, in a range of 70 to 105 feet, if you're wanting to be technical, with her deck sitting around 85 feet, or 25.9 meters, under the waves. The Moore is also the most intact wreck in that area that divers can visit, and she is marked with a buoy during non-winter months. There is a 3D shipwrecks model of her, which we'll include with a link in our socials. According to the site description, quote, shifting sands, bury and unbury much of this wreck at times. 50 years ago, the whole wreck, including the propeller, was exposed until one stormy winter buried much of the wreck, end quote. When the photos for the model were taken in 2023, much of the hull and deck were exposed, with the wooden hull still being surprisingly intact. The foredeck has collapsed along with some of the main deck, but most of the deck remains as it were. Divers can still see some machinery as well as the, quote, somewhat rare double-piston single-expansion steam engine, end quote, the Moore was run by. That's pretty cool.
It's a single-expansion steam engine. Wow.
Meh.
It's only mid.
Yeah. The Drake was able to be the hero yet again. It was the Drake this is two ships that, like, it's batting 0 for 2, you know? Like, it got the crews off, which, I mean, that's much better than saving a ship. But, like, I don't know. It sounds like these ships, it hasn't towed one to safety yet.
Yeah, fair.
It's towed it to safer, but not to safety.
Yeah, but she's not the one causing the wrecks. We get into it a little later, but it's speculated that is she the bad luck or is she the hero? But I don't know, because there's a lot of ships suspiciously sinking around her.
Mm-hmm. Or just the wrong place, wrong time for the Drake to be.
I don't know. Maybe she's just a bad luck Betty.
I got mud on my bottle here, dried mud.
Why?
Mountain biking.
You're so cool.
The Drake was able to be the hero yet again in 1900 when she was able to rescue an 8-person crew from the leaking schooner barge, the R. Halloran.
Oh, I put a different emphasis on that in my head. Halloran?
No. Halloran.
Halloran?
H-A-L-L-A-R-A-N.
Halloran?
Halloran. I would say the R. Halloran.
Okay, do that.
I don't know. I'm the one talking here.
Why'd you let me talk?
If you
know
a different way to pronounce it, underthewayspodcast@gmail.com, how do you pronounce H-A-L-L-A-R-A-N? I think it's Halloran. The R. Halloran was a 189-foot-long, 36-foot-wide, and 16-foot-deep schooner built in Toledo, Ohio in 1880. She was originally a merchant vessel, but when she was sinking, she was labeled as a schooner barge. That's interesting. Like, they reclassified
it as a sinking. Well, like, not because she was sinking. No. She was built as a merchant vessel. But by the time of her sinking, she was already labeled that. So sometime between when she was built and when she was sinking, she was switched over. Don't know when.
But not after she sank. It was before she was sinking.
Between 1880 and 1900, she became a schooner barge.
Of when she was sinking. There was an old newspaper article that mentioned a ship called the Halloran, however you say it. Well, that one is spelling changed. H-A-L-L-O-R-A-N. Being in a collision with another schooner, the Pilot, on September 26, 1883, and a little further digging from our researcher uncovered that it appeared that the R. Halloran was sometimes referred to as the Halloran in the papers for whatever reason. In this collision, which happened at night, the Pilot was upbound in Lake Michigan with a load of shingles, while the Halloran was downbound.
It's supposed to say downbound, not downtown. He's partying it up.
Over at the bar.
Downtown.
No, don't worry about correcting it. You can leave it. That's fine.
I know what her problem was.
Oh, man. And empty. That's why she was downtown. Gonna go for some grub or something. I don't know. The extent of damage to the Pilot was unknown, as well as the reason for the accident right off of Port Washington, Wisconsin. What the newspaper clipping did say was that the crew of the Pilot immediately abandoned ship, climbing on board the Halloran, who sustained only minor injuries herself. The tug Cyclone from the nearby port went out to the Halloran the next morning and brought the crew of the Pilot back to Port Washington before going out and searching for the now missing Pilot. The crew that came from the Pilot were noted as being, quote, half-clad, some being attired in nothing but pants and shirt, and the crew stated that they were neither offered clothing nor food by the Halloran crew, end quote.
We'll give you shelter, but we're not going to do anything else for you.
The bare minimum. And then the next bit of information we know is the sinking of the Halloran on May 2nd, 1900, of which the Drake, our protagonist in this episode, is a part of. According to the Saginaw Courier-Herald news article about the incident, this was, quote, the first wreck of the season on the Great Lakes, end quote. About 20 miles west of Standard Rock, the Halloran, downbound in Lake Superior and fully loaded with, you guessed it, iron ore, sprang a leak. In fact, recall that we said the Halloran, by this time, was now a schooner barge. This trip, she was actually the consort to the Drake, meaning she was being towed. Both were loaded with iron ore and en route from Two Harbors, Minnesota, and headed for Conneaut, Ohio. The crew on board the Halloran
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results. Expert support. Lose more weight. Make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.
Consisted of 7 men and a woman cook, Captain Nicholson on board the Drake reported a heavy sea rising around 11 p.m., which caused the ship to work exponentially harder. To combat this, he changed the course and headed to Marquette in hopes of both a quicker, smoother ride and eventual shelter.
Also, aren't all the ships that are sinking full of iron ore, aside from the ones full of shingles, aren't they all like iron ore? Probably. I feel like Lake Superior has something against iron ore. Big if true. It's like a pole
okay,
for iron
ore.
Okay,
this one
ore.
Was in Michigan, wasn't it?
Michigan is on the southern side of Lake Superior. Wait, you meant Lake Michigan. Hang on. Ignore me. Oh, downbound Lake Superior.
Yeah, these ships, okay.
Carry on.
They're not on
saying.
Land, by the way.
I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on and keep conspiring over here. Keep reading.
Shortly after the course changed, the crew on board the Halloran blew a distress signal and, using a megaphone, notified the steamer that their ship had sprung a leak that was bringing in water quicker than their pumps could empty it out. The line was cast off from the steamer, and she turned back to go and rescue the crew from the sinking schooner. Those aboard the Halloran launched their yawl and drew alongside the Drake. All but the captain made it safely aboard the Drake before the steamer drifted down and accidentally crushed the yawl against the Halloran's hull. The captain of the schooner had luckily enough forethought of tying a line around his waist, and he was able to be hauled aboard the Drake, but not without suffering injuries to his lower limbs first. The cook was also slightly injured, though her exact injuries are never mentioned.
That sucks.
Yeah. After rescuing the crew, everyone waited anxiously for the Halloran to sink, but she took her time. The Drake cruised around the area until around 7 a.m. when the Halloran finally disappeared in the fog and was presumed to have sunk. The Drake steamed around until 11 a.m. searching for the now missing ship, but to no avail, so she continued on to Marquette.
The Halloran... Finally, I thought she'd never leave.
I know.
I thought she'd never sink.
The Halloran, owned by the Carnegie Steel Company when she sank, was insured for $11,000 with Smith, Davis, and Company out of Buffalo, New York. That would be worth well over $424,000 today. It was later found out that the Halloran was leaking prior to her time of distress whistle being blown. However, the pumps were able to keep up with the water enough that it wasn't seen as a problem. Captain Nicholson from the Drake assumed that recent renovations to the schooner, which took place the fall prior, are probably what caused the failure to her water pumps. Quote, ships were left under the timbers and these got awash and chocked the pumps. At any rate, they failed to work, end quote. As of 1900, it was unknown the exact location that the Halloran went down, and we believe she is still considered missing to this day, and not a lot can really be found about her. Throughout her lifetime, the Drake saved at least four crews from various foundering vessels. However, getting back to our original story, her final rescue of her own consort's crew caused a fatal blow to her structure that ended up resulting in her suffering the same fate. The Drake was now mortally wounded. The loss of her smokestack due to the Michigan's jib boom lopping it off prevented the appropriate draft needed for her boilers to form and send a full head of steam to her engines for power, as well as part of that steam being diverted to the pumps in order to keep the flooding below decks at bay. The latter was damaged in the destruction of the aft cabin. Without full steam power, the captain on board the Drake, J.W. Nicholson, could not control where the ship went, which was especially dangerous in stormy weather. This left the Drake vulnerable and exposed to the swells and troughs of the waves and gale-force winds whipping about them. Captain Nicholson ordered the crew to break up the remnants of the cabins in order to feed a now wood fire in hopes of doing anything to save themselves. But wood fires don't burn as hot as coal fires do, and while being something for the crew to do, efforts seemed futile at best. Luckily for those on board the Drake, the Drake's crew and captain, as well as those rescued from the consort Michigan, another ship was making its way upbound. A 2-year-old steel package freighter called the Northern Wave was headed upbound out of Whitefish Bay shortly after 6 a.m. when the crew spotted the struggling Drake. Aside from seeing the distress signal flying from one of her masts, they also saw the crew running around frantically hacking at the cabins with fire axes and bare hands. That would be a sight to behold.
Also, hopefully at the not the same time.
Yes.
Save your hands.
Yes. Captain M.S. Peterson on board the Northern Wave eased his vessel to the windward side of the foundering Drake. Windward meaning the side facing the wind, more than likely in an effort to protect the sinking ship and ease in the rescue of those on board. When the Northern Wave drew close enough, three crew members from the Drake leapt across to the deck of the steel freighter. However, heavy seas prevented the vessel from staying alongside the Drake for too long due to the risk of damaging the wooden hull even further. There was a note that the Northern Wave collided with the Drake, but that no damage was done to at least the Northern Wave, and it's safe to say that the Drake's fate was already sealed by this point. An attempt to tow the injured ship was made, but the waterlogged Drake was too heavy and the hawser snapped almost immediately after being stretched out. Eventually, Captain Peterson on the Northern Wave informed Captain Nicholson on the Drake via megaphone that he would stand nearby in case the weather cooperated and the Drake's crew could be taken off safely, but both knew the likelihood of that was pretty slim. And launching a lifeboat in this weather would prove nearly impossible, let alone a death wish. So instead, the two ships continued toward any kind of safe harbor, with the Northern Wave hovering near the Drake to rescue anyone should it come down to that.
Also, I kind of found it interesting. I don't know why I didn't think about it, but communication through megaphone is interesting, because I guess I just didn't think about how ships communicated prior to radios. But yeah, it's either shouting or megaphone.
Yeah, and it's probably shouting through megaphone.
Yeah, yeah, especially with like the wind and the waves. But I don't know, that just struck me as interesting, because I just didn't even think about it.
No, same here. And it would not have been electronic or anything. Literally, just like a cone.
yeah,
in front of you. That's it, probably.
Yep.
By late afternoon, the Drake was unable to keep up with steam production and was filling up quickly with water. Her movements slowed to a crawl. The Northern Wave kept her promise and remained nearby. The storm raged on, and the situation appeared hopeless until, lo and behold, another steel freighter showed up. Enter the Crescent City. The Crescent City was almost twice the size of the Drake and was able to use her immense hull size to provide an artificial lee or wind protection from the prevailing winds. Unfortunately, and a little bit of a trigger warning for death, the Michigan's cook, Henry Brown, who was on board the Drake, leapt toward the Crescent City prior to the two vessels being close enough together, and he was sadly swallowed up by Lake Superior, never to be seen again. Another source mentioned that Brown was an older gentleman, and he might not have been able to make the jump from the Drake to the larger steel ship. Seeing this, or knowing not to test their luck, the rest of the crew waited until the hulls of the two ships were grating against each other before they too made their way to safety. By 5 p.m., everyone was now on board the Crescent City, and the Drake was abandoned to her own fate. The Crescent City reached the Sioux Locks along with the Michigan and the Drake crews around 2 p.m. on October 3rd, 1901. In the end, the Michigan was valued at a $19,000 total loss, while the Drake was priced at $35,000. That is a combined total of just over $2 million U.S. today in 2026. And just to mention, according to some old newspaper articles, the Crescent City was referred to as the Superior City, but most sources we could find referred to it as the Crescent City. The schooner barge Michigan was perhaps never seen again after that night of her sinking, and our researcher really couldn't find much of anything about her life prior. However, one source did mention that she sits in about 650 feet or 198 meters of water, so maybe she just has not been spotted. Maybe she has. More info on this later. The wreck of the Drake, on the other hand, was first discovered only 4 days after she sank on October 6, 1901, by Captain Campbell on the Liberty. He was downbound on Lake Superior, headed for the Sioux Locks, when he spotted the missing Drake. Captain Campbell reported her being located between Vermilion Point and Whitefish Point. The Drake was lying on her side in about 40 feet of water, or 12.2 meters, with about 5 feet, or 1.5 meters, of water over her still-floating spar that was attached to her hull. After the sighting, however, the wreck of the Drake remained largely forgotten for the next 77 years, until she was rediscovered in 1978 by none other than the Great Lakes Shipwreck Historical Society, GLSHS. As you guys probably know, our good listeners, our faithful listeners, probably know the initials we quite well by now.
Bring them up quite a bit.
They know their things. Our listeners and the Great Lakes Shipwreck Historical Society. This discovery was during the dark years of the GLSHS, some would consider it, when it was run by Tom Farnquist, and the Drake was not safe from their Robin Hood-esque scavenging techniques. The GLSHS took the Drake's rudder, windlass, anchor, and a signboard when they returned to the wreck in the 1980s. As we mentioned in the recent Edmund Fitzgerald episodes, and if you haven't listened to those yet, we're just wondering what you've been doing. They're pretty good.
We just want to know. Just,
you
know, curious.
Just scooch on by. You know, they're there. A couple rows back. But yes, Michigan passed the Michigan. As we mentioned in the trying to figure out where the sentence ran off to. Anyway, we mentioned in the recent Edmund Fitzgerald episodes that Michigan passed the Michigan's Antiquities Act of 1980, which prohibited the removal of artifacts from shipwrecks on the Great Lakes bottomlands.
I don't know. It just sounds like a Wild West that needs to be explored. The Great Lakes bottomlands. Yeehaw!
Yeehaw! Anyway. Yeah, make sure if you're at a shipwreck, don't take stuff. Just leave it there.
Take only memories. Leave only bubbles.
Leave the bubbles.
Even if you're trying to play Robin Hood, it's against the law.
Mm-hmm.
No thatchy. Well, no takey.
A Evening News article published in 1992 reported about a raid which took place on the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum and other associated offices, which was done by the Michigan Department of Natural Resources and Environment. This group ended up finding evidence of around 150 artifacts that had been illegally removed from the state-claimed bottomlands, which included memorabilia from the Drake. Since then, and after the settlement agreement with the GLSHS, the Drake's rudder, anchor, and windlass are now owned by the state of Michigan. The rudder is on loan to the GLSHS and is on display near the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum, while the anchor and the windlass are on loan to Whitefish Township for display next to its community building. Wow, that's pretty cool. That's a big rudder.
I know, and it's really cool.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
You don't usually see a wooden rudder, but that is bigger than I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The Drake came up again in October of 2021 when the GLSHS announced the findings of three 1800s-era shipwrecks in the vicinity of Grand Marais, Michigan. This included the Drake, one of her many consorts, the Dot, and another schooner barge that we'll get into in another episode, the Frank W. Wheeler, which sank in 1885. But in the 2021 Michigan Public NPR interview with Lucas Polak, Bruce Lynn, executive director of the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum, mentioned the third shipwreck found being the Michigan. The same Michigan, who was the consort that sank around the same time as the Drake. And also poses the question of, was the Drake a bad luck ship? Who knows?
You're a villain. I don't know.
Or just, like, super unlucky. Or super lucky because
right
I was able to, like,
place.
Yeah, right place to save crews, wrong time to save other ships. I don't know, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck for crew, bad luck for ships.
Yeah.
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah. 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 Recent Great Lakes divers have reported that the Drake's wreck today lies scattered on the lake bed of Superior about half a mile or 0.8 kilometers from Vermilion Point. Decades of winter ice as well as spring and fall storms have smashed the remains of her once upright keel, leaving only her boiler standing. What is exposed of the wreck year to year depends on the shifting of the sands. The Drake's wreck is currently protected by the Whitefish Point Underwater Preserve as part of an underwater museum. There is a 3D model of what is left of the Drake that we will also link to in our socials. It's interesting to see the boiler next to basically a ribcage of a ship, but that is the story of the M.M. Drake, along with a few others along the way.
Just a few little stories that we grabbed here and there that don't have a lot of information for their own episode.
Hmm.
It looks like a little weird submarine.
It does. That's an interesting
a ship
sort of wreck.
Yeah, if you click on the little hyperlink on here, you can actually play around with it on the 3D model, which will include the link, like Andrew said, on our socials for the rest of y'all. But
it's pretty cool.
Good job. Last week's trivia. Which Great Lake received its own Bill of Rights in recent years? Which included the right to exist and flourish while also having the opportunity for citizens to sue on its behalf, only to have this bill invalidated the year after by a federal judge? The answer is Lake Erie, of course. This all was initially inspired by a toxic algae bloom in the lake during the summer of 2014, which ended up causing a state of emergency declaration, as well as leaving 500,000 people without water for 3 days. This occurrence sparked the beginning of Toledoans. I'm going to go with Toledoans.
Yeah, I think that's how it is.
Probably not Toledoans. Toledoans for Safe Water, a grassroots advocacy group that works hard to clean up and protect Lake Erie even to this day. This group partnered with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, and in 2019, these two groups brought to the table the Lake Erie Bill of Rights Charter Amendment, which stated that the lake had the right to, quote, exist, flourish, and naturally evolve, end quote. It passed with a 61% approval rating, although it should be noted that turnout was low, but since it was a special local election, that was pretty standard. The Lake Erie Bill of Rights, or LEBOR, I'm going to go with LEBOR, was part of what is called the Rights of Nature Legal Movement. Good thing this was your episode. This was a term first coined by environmental lawyer Christopher Stone in the Southern California Law Review in 1972. LEBOR could help. I'm going to say flubber. Sorry. LEBOR could help grant rights to Lake Erie to sue polluters with a little help from human attorneys, obviously. This Bill of Rights established, quote, irrevocable rights for the Lake Erie ecosystem to exist, flourish, and naturally evolve, a right to a healthy environment for the residents of Toledo, which elevates the rights of the community and its natural environment over powers claimed by certain corporations, end quote. The day after filing, agricultural company Drew's Farms challenged the legislation, filing a lawsuit against the city of Toledo. The state of Ohio joined the suit as co-plaintiff shortly after, and U.S. District Judge Jack Zori sided with the plaintiffs, ruling that LEBOR was, quote, unconstitutionally vague and exceeded Toledo's municipal authority, end quote. Womp, womp. While LEBOR was the first law in the U.S. to actually acknowledge the rights of an entire specific ecosystem, it was deemed preemptive of the state law, impermissibly vague, and in violation of the 14th Amendment rights to due process. In essence, Judge Zuri said that the Lake Erie Bill of Rights, quote, ignored basic legal principles and constitutional limitations, end quote, making claims to an entire lake that borders dozens of cities, 4 states, and 2 countries, not just the city of Toledo. This means that the lake's health and well-being lies well beyond the city's constitutional right to local self-government and even conflict with Ohio law. So, in essence, the LEBOR did not survive more than a year, but environmentalists and lake advocates continue efforts to protect the waters that mean so much to them and the environment around them. So, oops, she did have a Bill of Rights for a second, but you can't give all that power to just one city on a lake. So,
and that is the story of the M.M. Drake.
Oh, were you supposed to finish that? I thought you said that.
That was a joke because that was the longest trivia.
That's funny.
It was very educational, but. That was a lot of words.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's a lot of words. No, it's...
You want to talk too, dang it!
No, thanks for bringing us through it. That's very interesting. It's, yeah. A town or city does not have say over an entire lake.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Lake Erie. Try again next year.
Yeah.
This week's trivia, none for this week. We'll catch you next week for another one. Skip on by next week for more Great Lakes and Shipwreck adventures. As always, send us your wish list of wrecks, lighthouses, phenomena, and more that you'd like us to cover to our email, underthewavespodcast@gmail.com. You can find the pictures, whatever we have, for this week's episode on our socials, Under the Waves Podcast. Make sure you add podcast to that title, or else you may find other things lurking out there under the waves, and we are not responsible for that. And then, as always, you can find our sources, send us a message, or find ways to support the show on our website, www.underthewavespodcast.com. Thanks in advance for liking, commenting. Yes, if you're still sticking with your New Year's resolutions, and comment no if those are long gone history by now. And then also rate the podcast. Thanks for that. Let's bring more people than ever into our crew this year. Make 2026 our year. We're barely past the first full week of 2026, and wow, what a doozy it already is. If you know, you know, and if you don't, consider yourself privileged. Our hearts go out to those who are continuously affected by the actions and decisions caused by our current administration. Let's be real, it's affecting us all, but to those who are bearing the brunt of these brutalities, we are standing with you, and you are not alone. If you're feeling discouraged or angry, your response is valid and more than justified. Remember, there is still compassion, accountability, and community out there. Take the moments you need. Remember to dance in the resistance and continue to rise up against the regime. We love you. We're proud of you. And together, we will build a better tomorrow. I'm going to be going through the links we have in our show notes, updating what needs to be updated, and keeping things accessible. If you have a link you think would be beneficial, please feel free to send that to our email. We are better together. And again, we love you. Hang in there. And we'll catch you in the next episode.
And in a similar vein, share this episode with someone grabbing a canned food item the next time you're in the grocery store. Perhaps you're sticking to the outskirts of the store since you know it's New Year's after all. But think of this as your top secret mission to venture into the inner sanctum that is the canned food or the soup aisle and recruit the next listener. So share this with the person who is standing in the canned goods aisle for perhaps an alarmingly long amount of time. Perhaps not because they're indecisive, but because they're quietly assessing possibility. This individual sees cream of mushroom soup and doesn't just think soup, they think base, foundation, structural integrity. They've quite possibly never followed a recipe, and yet somehow deep in the marrow of their bones, in a true Midwest fashion, this can will eventually become a casserole. Find the person who refers to meals as something I threw together, even though it actually required 4 different recipes, 3 hours, 2 trips to the grocery store, and at least 1 can with a label older than some people's friendships. They also believe salads can and should include marshmallows, mayonnaise, or crushed pretzels, and will defend the stands with unsettling confidence. Lettuce is optional. Suspicion is not. Or maybe you'll see your victim, recruitment, and you'll nod respectfully at the canned corn alongside them. They'll linger near the tuna, weighing out the emotional and nutritional risks. Somehow, you just know they've uttered the words, "This would be good in a hot dish," and meant it as the highest compliment imaginable. Your pantry contains cans with no clear origin story, yet throwing any of them away feels wrong somehow. Not unsafe, just wrong. These people understand that some meals aren't just meant to be fresh, but they are meant to be assembled. They know the quiet power of a church basement buffet, the thrill of a recipe card written in handwriting that suggests the author has been gone for some time, and the unspoken rule of it is, if it involves gelatin, it must be chilled overnight, no questions asked. While perhaps not outright admitted, these fine folks trust canned food the way sailors trust a lake that looks calm but holds secrets. They sense that beneath the labels and sodium content lies history, preservation, survival, lore. So share this episode with them, the ones who know a good meal doesn't always come from scratch, that casseroles are a form of storytelling, and that some of the strangest, most comforting things are held together by tins tackets, and traditions. If this person happens to be you, might as well grab a cart and a few extra cans while you're at it, just to be safe. We release new episodes every Friday, and until then, folks, fair winds and following seas.
We'll catch you next time under the waves. Bye!
Cheers. That was the hardest, longest outro I've ever read. I don't know why it was so hard to not laugh.
That's your best work. I really want a Watergate salad now.
I don't.